Thanks for downloading Friday Night Comedy from BBC Radio 4. If you want to find out more, visit the Radio 4 website. But not before you listen to this week's Now Show.
Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Marcus Brigstock, Andy Zaltzman, Jake Yap, Laura Shavin and Mitch Benn. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you. So, this week marked 100 days to the general election and 103 and a half days to the collapse of the minority government stitched together afterwards, and 110 days until the calling of the next election in 140 days.
More cheerfully, today marks 97 days till a day after the next election, which is a much happier thing to think about. This is all because of the new fixed terms, of course. The last election in 2010 was called on April the 6th and held on May the 6th. 30 days was all we had to put up with, and that was more than enough.
Yeah, 100 days is interminable, and before long we'll be like America, where campaigning politicians only kiss babies because by polling day they'll be eligible to vote.
If towns or shops put their Christmas decorations up at the beginning of October, we all complain about it, and that's only 87 days.
If they follow this pattern closely enough, then the week before polling day will end with Black Friday, where in desperation each party offers super deals.
50% off income tax. That's right, 50%!
People will be queuing outside Revenue and Customs, and Gary Barlow will be at the front in a tent. Black Friday, of course, is a term not heard in the UK until very recently. And in fact, Benedict Cumberbatch still refers to it as Coloured Friday, which is a term we don't generally use anymore. The 100 days, though, is going to be a time when parties that focus on a single issue do come under scrutiny for all the rest of their policies.
This week, it was the turn of the Greens, whose leader, Natalie Bennett, was interviewed and proved to have ideas on defence and security which have rattled one or two of her most prominent supporters.
It's not easy voting green. People think it's all recycling and hugging trees. Then you find out that they want to disband the army and make it legal to join a terrorist group and crazy stuff like that. It's not easy voting green. Who wouldn't want to look after the environment better? And then suddenly you realize that their views on pretty much everything else are kind of eccentric and extreme. It's not gonna be easy voting green.
Yeah! Kermit the punt there.
So, 100 days to the election, which means that it's only about another 80 or so that David Cameron has to come up with excuses to avoid the debates.
He's done quite well so far. Originally, it was four parties, including UKIP, but he said he wouldn't take part without the Greens, which made sense because Greens are an essential part of your five a day. But now they've also invited the SNP and Plaid Cymru, so he has now suggested that the Northern Ireland Party should be invited too.
Which would bring the number of lecterns needed to 8 or 9 if you count the empty one for where Sinn Féin haven't turned up. So with 8 parties and 3 debates, the broadcasters are very excited.
And this is because they've realised it could be a knockout competition.
If we really want our elections just to become a glorified TV show, then let's at least do it properly.
Well, chooks, we've had a Laura laugh during tonight's debate. But which eligible party leader will our voter choose? Here's our Graham to remind you.
Well, voters, will you choose leader number one? He's not a fan of human rights, but you can enjoy long walks on the beach during one of his many holidays to Cornwall. Or leader number two, he'll take you out for a romantic meal, but don't order the bacon sandwich. Or leader number three... No one's voting for him. So how about leader number four? He likes a drink, but don't expect a romantic break to Europe anytime soon. So the choice is up to you, you poor sods.
Now, ultimately, though, elections are important. I mean, look at the impact of the election in Greece, where the left-wing anti-austerity party Syriza are now about to challenge the entire economic orthodoxy of Europe and renegotiate the terms of their bailout with the EU.
First signs are that the new prime minister doesn't want to leave the EU, and the talk is not so much of Grexit as green negotiation. reconciliation, reform. And Angela Merkel trying not to grommet.
See, neither David Cameron nor Ed Miliband could actually bring themselves to offer congratulations, because the idea that democracy is more important than the banking system clearly petrifies everybody, and especially, of course, Germany. The worst-case scenario for Germany is if Greece defaults and they have to send the bailiffs in.
Good morning. We have come to recover our debts. Where is your television?
We already sold it.
Your piano?
No, we have no assets left, I'm afraid.
Oh, come on, you don't fool me. You're an ancient civilization. You have antiquities. You must have valuable antiquities.
It's true, we do have.
Excellent. Where are they?
In the British Museum.
That's why we're not giving them back the Elgin Marbles. If they do, they'll be on eBay in a week. It's all become a bit of a tense situation. And to make it even worse, it involves the word Greece. And a big duet between the new Prime Minister and Angela Merkel.
I'm a cottages that multiplying, that we are losing control. And the bailouts you are supplying, they are stultifying.
You better pay up. We need our money back. And we want it back from you. You better pay up. You better understand. You must pay the money, Joe.
We want to pay it.
Or the yours all is through. You're the one I don't want.
So for those confused by what's going to be thrown at them over the next 100 days, help is at hand. Please welcome Jake Yap.
I thought I would try to do something in the spirit of public service broadcasting, namely to condense all of the policies of five British political parties into a snappy 2-minute long song. Take it away, Harry. Will there be more money allocated to the NHS? Conservatives say no, but Lib Dem, Labour and the Greens say yes. And everyone wants to ensure there's better out-of-hours access. And all agree it's someone else's fault that it is in a mess. UKIP say they'll spend more, but in truth it's anybody's guess. Although they're clear they want to reinstate a formal theatre dress. But that was back in 2010, and so I'm sorry, I digress. But if caning's still in, kids will need somewhere to convalesce. When it comes to whether we think we should build the HS2, Conservatives and Labour and the Liberal Democrats all do, but UKIP and the Greens are both opposed to these machines, the latter favouring the putting back in public hands of railways too.
It's been such a fun week.
The Lib Dems want 200,000 green job opportunities. In 10 years, Labour say there'll be 1 million green vacancies, and UKIP wants to scrap all green tax and wind turbine subsidies. Conservatives are quiet, but the Greens say they'll oppose fracking and nuclear power development, aiming for 100% Europe-wide renewable energy by 2050, oppose airport expansion, end fuel poverty, remove VAT from insulation and housing renovation, find natural solutions for flood defence, such as planting trees, which, as you know, absorb water 67% more quickly than grassland, and create low-energy factories such as those pioneered in Switzerland and Germany. And look after all the bees. The Greens would scrap the Trident submarine programme decisively. The Liberal Democrats would scale it back from 4 subs down to 3. A Labour PM would renew the subs, and so would a Tory, and so would UKIP, but again, at this stage only, probably. Tuition fees on STEM courses, forgive the terminology. Sciences and maths and engineering and technology with Labour would be capped. The Greens and UKIP wanted scrapped. The Liberal Democrats would probably just issue an apology. It seems the parties are still shaping up some of their policy. If there's one thing that I have learned on this Homeric odyssey, it's concrete statements of intent are something of an oddity, but snappy mottos are a very highly priced commodity.
Securing a better future for Britain.
Conservatives sound smarmy. The Lib Dems want to
ease the squeeze.
You kipper.
The People's Army.
Labour want to
shake Brit together,
which tends to alarm me.
'Cause if they knew my neighbours, then they'd realise that's barmy. So, when it comes to May the 6th, please vote, I urge you to. But in terms of what you're voting for, I haven't got a clue.
And now, would you please welcome back to the Now Show, Andy Zaltzman.
Thank you. Hello. So, Apple, the celebrity technology firm, have you heard of them? This week announced world record quarterly profits, $18 billion, breaking the record previously jointly held at $15.9 billion by oil pinup boys ExxonMobil and Mick and Brenda's mobile calf on the A421. Apple has been one of the defining tales of the 21st century. Their technology and others like it has become fundamental to the tapestry of constant communication and instant ephemera that make up our 21st century lives. Of course, not everyone likes it. A lot of people complain these days that people are always snout down on a smartphone, tweeting about how their finger hurt yesterday. And people complain that Twitter exemplifies the disposable nothingness of our culture. What can you express in 140 characters that's worthwhile? But in fact, it's a lot better than it used to be when it was first invented back in Old Testament times, 40 characters maximum, which caused a few problems with the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's... Oh, I've only got two left. Ox. It's going to have to be ox. Anyway, I digress. $18 billion. According to some reports, Apple is now worth almost as much as Switzerland and has more money in the bank than the entire United Kingdom. It could buy a nuclear arsenal and still have change to buy arsenal. Which might work. I think a big bustling warhead up front might be just the focal point that Arsene Wenger needs to give his attack a more clinical, intimidating edge at the business end of the season. Of course, you can't blame Apple for making these massive profits. Their success has frankly been inevitable ever since three significant events occurred. One, we evolved opposable thumbs. Two, a caveman first thought, Ugra's got a nice new flint. Now I want a nice new flint. And three, when Alexander Graham Bell thought, I really want to call in a pizza. If only I could. Of course, some have quibbled with Apple's rather gymnastic approach to tax as they common-etch themselves through various international loopholes before sticking their arse out at the tax judges, winking knowingly and waiting for the inevitable perfect tens. But the fact is, their products are just keeping getting more and more miraculous. There was this issue of The New Scientist recently that I've got here, which had a feature on new technologies coming out on the front. It's following on from the driverless car, which, of course, itself followed the riderless horse. Yeah, we can learn a lot from horse racing. I think football can learn a lot from horse racing. Because I like sport, but I get very annoyed by footballers feigning injury. I think I can learn from how horse racing deals with injured participants, you know. If you're not calling for the physio and the magic sponge, but you were calling for a bolt gun and the tarpaulin of mercy, you see how quickly they get back to their feet. But, anyway, so here it is. This is the article about, would you get on a pilotless plane? Let me read you the entire article. No. It's also got details of the latest Apple products we can expect. That is responding to the Google Glass. They've announced the launch of the new Apple Eyeball. It's a wireless, infinite G-enabled, 6D-compatible multimedia spheroid that replaces the human eyeball to provide the ultimate entertaining and gaming experience. It's part of Apple's plans to replace all bodily organs with Apple products by the year 2028. The review says it's much better than another disappointing offering from BlackBerry, the ill-fitting BlackBerry Q-Buy. It just makes so many mistakes, that company. They've got these Samsung Larynx coming out. You just staple it directly onto your throat and it translates your thoughts directly into sounds. Quite similar to your actual larynx. The Sony Tapeworm, which records all your intestinal activities on a special ticker tape, which you then explert directly into the accompanying toilet-ready reader to get dietary advice. I have to have that. I cannot live with that. What, £12,999? What the heck? Sign me up.
And please welcome Mitch Benn.
I'd like to talk to you, if I may, about an affliction which is blighting my family and onto which I'm sure many parents can relate. My daughter got hooked on it months ago. We hoped it was a phase, but it won't let her go. And now she's got a little sister on it as well. It's turning her home into a living hell. They speak in a language I don't understand, about mythical creatures in imaginary lands. And now I know the terrible thing I must do to make sense of it all. I gotta go there too. I'm gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft if I ever wanna speak to my children again. I'm gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft, learn how to dig diamonds and avoid endermen. I'm gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft. I thought marshy monsters was complex enough. I'm gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft, but there's so much stuff. It's got the junkiest graphics that I've ever seen. It's like an endless non-violent Wolfenstein. They're building these structures right up to the sky, and no one seems to know the reason why. And when they can't play no more, they spend the rest of the day in front of YouTube watching other kids play. They don't seem to know the real world still exists. It's like they've joined the Scientologists. So I'm gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft. If I ever want another go on my own computer, gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft. Then maybe my kids won't be so hard to get through to. I've gotta learn how to play Minecraft. Though I don't think the iron of owls in the day, I'm gonna have to learn how to play Minecraft. Okay, let's play.
Right, Greta, why am I up in the air now? I was digging a hole a minute ago. What do you mean I've teleported? Why am I a pig now? I don't understand!
I hope my nephew's listening. That's what it's like. So, last week he tackled the Iraq war, but this week he's chosen a rather more serious subject. A film he liked as a child. Please welcome Marcus Brigstock.
Thank you very much. Important question for us now. If there's something strange in your neighbourhood, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
Yes. And then what will happen? Well, the new all-female Ghostbusters will answer the phone and say...
Oh, sorry, we can't come out and bust your ghost because we're doing our nails and it takes ages for us to get ready. And three of us are menstruating and ghosts are attracted to blood. And anyway, these backpacks are too heavy for girls.
Yeah, that's what would happen. And then Mrs. Stay Puft, the giant marshmallow lady, won't show up because very judgmental comments have been made about her size. And Ghostbusters are men. They're supposed to be men. Everyone knows that. Women can't bust ghosts. That's science. If you have a problem with the casting of an all-female Ghostbusters film, who can you call? Well, I'd start with your mother to see if there's any way she can help you grow up and be a more rounded human being who's not just some incurious pate stuck to a human skeleton. Misogynist, sexist, and dolts, listen up. Sorry to spoil it for you, but Ghostbusters aren't real. Neither are ghosts, nor is UKIP. They're all made up for a laugh. James Bond can be Idris Elba. Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't have a real baby in the film Junior, and Robert Peston is animated by Pixar. It's all fiction. It doesn't matter. So here are two reactions to the announcement that the Ghostbusters in Ghostbusters 3 will all be played by women. The first comes from Ernie Hudson, who played Winston in the other Ghostbusters films. He said...
I love females.
Which was a good start from Ernie. Then he said...
I hope that if they go that way, at least they'll be funny. And if they're not funny, at least hopefully it'll be sexy.
Good for you, Ernie. Anyway... The second reaction after Ernie's one comes from my 9-year-old daughter, who I told about the new film this morning. I said, look, they're making a new Ghostbusters film, and all the Ghostbusters are going to be women. And I showed her the picture, and she said, yay. And then she smiled for quite a while. Imagine she thought, yes, a bold step which will confront the patriarchy and advance the rights of every woman to bust ghosts on her own terms and as an equal whenever she sees fit. I am a feminist. Lots of feminists would say I'm not a very good one.
You're not.
Shh, man speaking. Now, I'm a feminist in as much as I believe women and men are different. There's scientific innie-outy pants-based evidence to support that. But the women and men are equal and should be treated as such, except when to do so is stupid. Men shouldn't be expected to have babies and produce milk, and women can't reasonably expect to be allowed to join some golf clubs. It's 2015. It's not the future. See, the only men who think that feminism is boys against girls are those who thoughtlessly reap the greatest advantages from the current setup. You know, the sort of men who still think harass is two words. No, they'll say stupid things like,
if anything, equality has gone too far.
No, you see, that's one of the things about equality. It can't go too far. It can only go halfway, and we've all known girls like that, right? Guys? Wow. Tough crowd. Feminism is all of us helping to dismantle the patriarchy, which damages all of us. Incidentally, being a woman is neither an entry qualification to being feminist nor an indication that you're likely to be one. That sort of sexist claptrap overlooks the fact that women are every bit as capable as men as being colossal idiots. It's one of the few areas where there really is a good deal of gender equality. And if you doubt that, visit Cardiff City Centre or Clapham High Street almost any night of the week.
I've been sick in my handbag. Who's getting chips? Oh, I've lost a pig in shoe now. I don't fancy him, but I might let him so he buys me a breezer.
It's funny because it's true. Anyway, if you're in some way bothered by all of the Ghostbusters being women and not that bothered by the fact that almost all of the top jobs are held by white men who all went to the same school, then frankly, I hope you get covered in ectoplasm and that your streams get crossed, which, to quote Egon from the original Ghostbusters, means every molecule in your body will explode at the speed of light, which obviously takes slightly longer if you're a woman. Thank you.
Right, elections are about what needs to change, but there are always people who don't want things to change. And this week saw a couple of examples of this. The Church of England finally has a female bishop, something they started discussing in 1966, so it's only taken 49 years. Lord Chilcot's probably thinking,
oh, well, I'm fine then, don't know what all the fuss is about.
Even after almost half a century of reports, debates, synods, discussions, working groups, consultations, and a long-running sitcom, some people still were even less happy than they were about Ghostbusters. When the congregation were asked by the Archbishop of York if there were any objections to Libby Lane becoming Bishop of Stockport, the Archbishop got heckled.
Is it now your will that she should be ordained?
It is.
No, not in the Bible. With respect, Your Grace, I ask to speak on this absolute impediment, please.
Now, don't worry, because the Archbishop had his comeback ready, and it was a zinger.
Today, we are assembled to consecrate Reverend Libby Lane as Bishop in the Church of God. The Church of England is by...
It's not the greatest reply to a heckle I've ever heard. I bet an old hand at standing up in front of a crowd like Archbishop Sentamu could have gone for it a bit more.
With respect, Your Grace, I ask to speak on this absolute impediment, please.
Ah! I remember when I had my first beer. Surely this is what happens when cousins marry.
No, not in the Bible.
Tell me, are you by any chance from Norfolk?
Yes.
Give me six.
Oh, Book of Comebacks, chapter 1, verse 6. Incidentally, I do like the way he shouts,
no, not in the Bible.
Because it sounds like the Archbishop was scribbling in it. This wasn't the only controversial ceremony this week. Many people were shocked by the official attitude to the death of King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia and the sight of our Prime Minister and future head of state grovelling to a country that still publicly beheads people, something Britain stopped doing in 1747. But hey, they buy a lot of helicopters. Mindful of the 300,000 UK voters who work in the arms industry, Cameron went to the funeral because, let's face it, money talks. But then, as a country that supplies a vast amounts of the West oil, I guess the Saudis have got used to the fact that no matter how diplomatic we are, our real motives will always tend to slip out.
We are gathered here today, all of us, to honour our good friend King Abdullah, a man whose sad death has brought a pump to our throats, a lump to our throats. A man whose reforms meant that Saudi Arabia was finally OPEC to the world. A man whose power was total and shall be remembered. May he rest in peace. And we welcome with unleaded joy the new ruler, King Salman, under whom we rest assured that Saudi Arabia will be heading in the right direction. And now it's good night from me and good night to human rights. Good night.
Fair to say that Saudi Arabia is slow to accept change, but of course there is somewhere even more reluctant to let the old ways go.
You're listening to Radio 4.
Yes. Any reforms to Radio 4's schedule, theme tunes or formats will tend to elicit cries of...
No! Not in the Home Service!
And this week, BBC Director General Tony Hall stepped into the Archer's Storylines controversy after complaints from listeners that the show is becoming too sensationalist.
The problem, apparently, is that the Archers has brought in an editor who used to work on EastEnders. Someone from EastEnders taking over the Archers? I think that might sound something like this.
It's all right. We're not actually going to do an Archers parody. We just want to panic listeners on Friday into thinking their clocks are 10 minutes slow. Now, you may have seen this week that serial Tour de France cheat Lance Armstrong has admitted that in the same circumstance, he would probably cheat again. So we've asked our audience if they've ever cheated at anything and why. You ever cheated at anything? Yes, strip poker. Why? Because no one wants to see that.
Lost property department in London train station claimed a bicycle that wasn't mine. Why? Well, I needed a bicycle.
I memorised all the number plates on the way to the driving test centre. Quite common by the sound of it.
I cheated at cross country at school. I went to the pub halfway through and took the shortcut back. Why? It was Tuesday happy hour.
Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye!
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis, with Marcus Brigstock, Andy Zaltzman, Jake Yap and Harry the Piano, Laura Shavin and Mitch Benn. It was written by the cast with additional material from Gareth Gwynn, Andy Walton, Mark Jones and Max Davis. It was devised with Bill Dare and the producer was Joe Nunnery.
That was The Now Show from Friday Night Comedy on BBC Radio 4. If you've enjoyed this download, why not visit the Radio 4 website, where you'll find other programmes to download and keep forever, entirely free.